Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Good morning and Happy New Year. I hope you're staying warm. Steve Dale's Pet World, and a concern is always keeping our pets relatively warm and comfortable. And on the phone right now, Dr. Catherine Leahy, who is a veterinarian at Heal Veterinary Clinic on Rockwell on the north side of Chicago. I hope you are also, Dr. Leahy, keeping warm.
Yes, keeping warm. We keep it warm here in the clinic, which is great. I love Chicago winter, so no complaints on my part.
However, some dogs do not feel the same way. Or if they do, it's a shame they didn't know better. And we'll talk about all that. You know, I want to know, I'm curious, do you treat dogs over the course of this time of year for frostbite?
No, thankfully, I mean, I've never seen a case of frostbite, thankfully. And thankfully, I mean, something to definitely be aware of and try to prevent. But thankfully, we don't see it too much in general. So thankfully, no, but something we definitely want to prevent.
But when it does happen, and it does, so good thing you haven't treated it. However, I know veterinarians who have that are in the Chicago area. And unfortunately, they don't make earmuffs for dogs, or they don't make gloves for tails. And it's those extremities that are most at risk, I believe.
Yes, completely correct. So you think about, just like with us, our fingers and our toes, for them, it is their tips of their ears, tip of their tail, that there's just not a lot of great circulation and insulation there. So definitely the places that are highest risk.
Do you have a dog yourself?
No, I have two cats, but I grew up with lots of dogs, so definitely have had a dog in the winter.
Okay, so let's play pretend. Let's say you had a toy poodle. Would you right now, in weather that's as cold as it is, put a coat or a sweater on your little dog?
Absolutely. Definitely any small dog or dog with short hair, you want to be putting a jacket on them.
Why? Why is that the case? And why do small dogs tend to, or maybe it's my imagination, be more at risk to the cold than, say, the big guys?
Yeah, so a lot of that is with small dogs, the surface area to volume ratio, right? So per pound of dog, you have, with a small dog, more skin exposed, right? So for more risk for heat loss. So, so they're just a lot more prone to getting colder.
So it's not just a wussy thing that, or a thing that millennials do because they have extra money and they don't know what to spend it on. It really is a good thing for those dogs to wear coats or sweaters.
Yes, you got it.
And at what weight is the magic? Here's the impossible question. At what weight is the magic weight and temperature? So if it's below 32 degrees, those dogs need it. If it's below 20 degrees, those dogs need it. Are there any specific rules that you tend to tell clients?
So, yeah, there's not a hard and fast rule just because every dog's different and everything like that. But generally, I say anytime it's below like 40 degrees, I want dogs that are like 20 pounds or less, definitely like wearing a coat. You know, obviously not an exact number. If it's like below 30, I would say dogs less than like 30 pounds, probably even 40 pounds too, I would say wearing a coat. And then, you know, after that, just kind of depends on what kind of fur they have, what breed they are and stuff like that. But if you're ever kind of, you know, questioning, should my dog wear a coat or not, just put one on, you know, better safe than sorry.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned what breed they are, and that makes me think about sighthounds. Sighthounds have this issue that I wish I had this problem. They only have body fat that is about 8%, and therefore, they do tend to get cold. Therefore, they also look really good in any outfit. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, yes, our sighthounds, like our greyhounds, things like that, you're right. They have very low body fat percentage, and that's normal for them, right? So definitely being erring on the safe side with getting them covered, you know, even booties and things like that. You'll see a lot of greyhounds, they kind of make these, like, they kind of have specific coats that they wear that go up their necks and stuff like that, kind of go up higher to really protect them. So, and they look great. So, yeah, those guys you got to be particularly careful with. So low body fat, short fur, all that stuff.
You know, here's something that's not, I don't believe, talked about enough. So everything we've talked about so far, I think that lots of interviews talk about that. Lots of people write about every, it's important, yes, but it's been talked. Here's something that I don't think is considered often enough. Let's say you have a geriatric dog. Those dogs, you know, older people, they get cold easily. You know, I mean, I began to think it, and therefore I will say it. I've been in these independent living centers or senior centers for people. And I swear it's like a furnace in these places. And people still say, I'm so cold. And you look at the thermostat, it's 85 degrees indoors, you know. Dogs are the same way as they get older. And even those dogs, and I'm talking about even Malamutes or Great Pyrenees or Huskies that normally would never, when they're 3 years old, in fact, it can't be cold enough for some of those dogs, but that's at the age of three. At the age of 13, I think, and you tell me what you think, it can be very different.
Totally. That is a really important point, right? So as dogs get older, like you said, like people, right? Thermoregulation is tougher, right? Metabolism slows down. Some dogs lose, you know, muscle and body fat and things like that. So in general, you're right. Our senior pets definitely do need more support for thermoregulation and everything like that. So that is a great thing to bring up because you're right. Like even for those dogs that typically are hardier in the cold, they still do suffer from, you know, not being able to do as well in the cold as they get older. So great point.
Now, you're going to call me crazy. Well, we've met and you probably would call me crazy. But I go outdoors in cold weather without gloves on when I take our dog out. And I've always done this on purpose, because when my hands get too cold, the rule is, even though the dog may be wearing a sweater or a coat, I come back in the house at least for some time and then go back out with the dog. Does that make any sense?
So you're talking about taking breaks to go inside? I'm sorry if I misunderstood the question.
That's okay. If my hands aren't, if I'm not wearing gloves and my hands get too cold, I figured, okay, for those dogs, it's too cold too.
Ah, yes. So I think that's a good way of kind of gauging, like, how, you know, in terms of how long should we be outside, things like that, is how comfortable you are outside, right? And, I mean, thankfully, right, they do have fur coats. They definitely have more protection in general. But, yeah, again, erring on the side of caution and kind of gauging it based on your comfort, given, you know, not having that protection, is a great way to kind of help guide, you know, how long we should be outside, things like that.
Well, I know that it's cold out, but you're going to, well, we hear some commercials, toast some or roast some marshmallows, and we'll be right back with Dr. Catherine Leahy. I want to talk about those booties you talk about, and we'll do that next on WGN. Dr. Catherine Leahy is here, keeping us all warm, or at least our pets safe, when the temperatures dive down to what they are. You know, I remember being on the air with, are you a Chicagoan, Dr. Leahy? I don't know. I mean, born in Chicago?
No, my husband was, but I was born in Rochester, New York, which does get very cold on Lake Ontario.
Yeah.
So,
yes,
yeah.
I think you beat us when it comes to snow, actually. But a radio personality, who a legend in Chicago, Bob Collins, used to say that I was crazy because I wanted to put coats and sweaters and jackets on dogs like we've talked about. And he said that, all right, there was the doghouse growing up as a kid. People today don't even know what a doghouse is, but that's where the dog was outside. And we're making these foo-foo dogs. Is there something to be said that the dogs are spending more time indoors? They're more accustomed to being indoors. Indoors, I know many people who have dogs, and I'm talking about dogs who generally even love cold weather, that sit right next to where the heat comes out, because that's what they're just not as acclimated to being outdoors as much as it was in the day of great-granddaddy. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, so I think there's a little bit of truth in that some breeds are able to get thicker coats, but as an kind of to adapt to being in the colder weather, their body will respond and kind of adapt to that. But that's not true for all breeds, right? So I think, thankfully, over the past, you know, few years, decades, we've come to be more sensitive to, you know, dogs' needs in terms of comfort and things like that. So I would say overall, most, you know, many dog breeds that we have, right, are not, right, evolutionarily adapted to be living in really cold temperatures. So most dogs do need to be staying inside most of the time. Just again, some of those Arctic breeds really are comfortable being out there all the time. But so some adaptations, you're right, but overall, I think it's a lot of us just kind of coming around and realizing that they do need more warmth, a lot of these guys. So
is the dog watching too many music videos and therefore wanting to entertain us, like Bruno Mars or somebody, when they're outside and they're doing this little dance? Or is it because the street salt really does hurt the dog's paws?
So, yeah, I think it really is uncomfortable, right? So lifting up the paws, right, it doesn't feel good. It's too cold for them, for some of these guys. So as cute as it is, right, you know, good to, for those dogs to kind of get some foot protection on them in the form of a booty, something like that, so that way they're not that feeling that discomfort from the cold ground.
So booties are okay to do, even if you're a manly man with a manly man's dog. It's okay. And in fact, the Iditarod dogs that do that race in Alaska, where they run forever, right, wrong, or otherwise, they do it. And they wear booties. Mm-hmm. Search and rescue dogs wear booties,
yeah,
too. Yeah. So it's are you giving us permission to do it?
Absolutely, right? So even the manliest man, right, will wear gloves on a cold day, hopefully, but or mittens. But yeah, so not only, right, because it's doing more than one thing too, right? It's not only keeping those feet warm, but also protecting the feet from other things that can happen in the winter, you know, exposure to salts and other things on the sidewalks. And then especially for those sled dogs that you talk about, right, helping to prevent ice balls and ice cubes and stuff from building up on the fur between the toes, things like that, which can get uncomfortable and irritating. So, yeah, it does more than one thing, and I think they look great. So,
there is pet-friendly salt. There are a variety of brands that do this now, and they say, the experts say, it is much better also for the environment. It is much better for the plants around the house that you may spray salt compared to the city, at least Chicago, maybe other cities increasingly are transforming to this pet-friendlier, or transitioning to this pet-friendlier salt. But most cities still use what they've always used. Is that tough on the paws? And also, are you concerned about them, if it annoys them, they may lick their paws more often and ingest that salt as well?
Right, yeah. So it's one of those things where, yeah, it definitely can cause some irritation. Thankfully, we don't see too much actual, like, severe injuries and things like that. But, yeah, it can be irritating. And again, licking, right? So licking is a natural, you know, reaction that dogs have to anything that's uncomfortable or trying to remove something. But the licking itself can cause irritation. So you can get in this kind of vicious cycle. And in terms of ingestion, I think I have had a few cases where we're like, oh, dogs kind of feeling off. Maybe they've been, you know, eating too much of the stuff that's on the roads and things like that. So, I mean, you know, antifreeze is the big thing that we worry about.
Yeah.
So we don't see that too much anymore. But, you know, definitely can cause some issues that you're better off just, you know, best to prevent, right? So
you mentioned antifreeze. How toxic is the antifreeze? And again, the so-called pet-friendly antifreeze, I'm not sure that's the right term. What pet-friendly antifreeze has is a bittering agent in it, so it isn't as appealing to taste, mm-hmm, for pets. It's still not a healthy thing, but it's not nearly as toxic as the real thing, so to speak. I'm glad you're not seeing it as much, but it's still a real potential concern because it is so harmful.
Yes. So it can cause, it can be life-threatening, right? The kidney damage that it can cause with antifreeze, and the whole, what you're talking about with the pet-friendly, right? So your traditional antifreeze is very sweet in flavor. So that's why animals really like it. And I know people that have, especially, I probably say that the time that I worry the most is when people have like cabins or, you know, whatever places like up at their like lake house that they're winterizing and they're, you know, put it in the toilet or whatever, just getting the house ready. And then the dog goes and licks it. So, yeah, very, very toxic. Need to be very careful using it, all those things. If you're at all concerned that your pet has gotten into it, I would bring them to an emergency clinic. There's also pet poison hotlines. But, yes, something very, very serious to be on the lookout for.
Mm-hmm. We only have about a minute left, but I can't have this conversation without mentioning the most important thing of all, cats. So, ideally, I believe when it's very cold out, the cats should simply be indoors. How important is it to do what Tony Orlando told us to do all those years ago, and knock 3 times on the car hood in the morning? Can you talk about why I'm saying that?
Yes. So cats who are, you know, what do you call them? Neighborhood cats, community cats, stray cats, right in these cold Chicago winters, they're looking for a place that's warm, that's cozy, that's protected from the elements. And unfortunately, going under your car hood and getting up near the engine is a perfect place for that. So, so ideally, every time you start your car, knocking that 3 times, listening for any, you know, movement or anything in there is a great way to help prevent, you know, unfortunately, injuring a cat, which is often life-threatening, the injuries that they get if you start a car with them under the hood. Obviously, you could just pop open the hood, too, and look, but that knock is something that's a little bit quicker, easier, and usually does the trick.
So. Yeah, or toot the horn 3 times. Dr. Catherine Leahy, thank you so very much from Heal Veterinary Clinic on the north side of Chicago. I appreciate your tips, and hopefully we will keep our pets safe and happy outdoors, even in cold weather. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, too. Have a happy holiday season if you're, you know, wrapping it up. And thank you so much.
Check out our Petcast. You can hear them at WGNradio.com. Really, just go to the website, WGNradio.com. Look for podcast. That's a tab. And click that, and you'll see all the podcasts, including my Petcast. And you'll hear lengthy and detailed conversations. I mean, really, on the radio, sometimes you can't get into the kind of depth that you would like to. And I think that even though they are only 20 minutes long, approximately, that is what makes the Petcast special. Next week on the show, there's an organization called the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants. What do they do? And if you're a cat lover, you know, we all know there are dog trainers and dog behaviorists. What about cats? Well, they include cats and, by the way, pet birds as well. We'll talk with the executive director of that organization next week. I remember, as a kid, going to the International Kennel Club of Chicago Dog Show. And then as an adult, being a part of that show, I was the guy who announced the best in breed, like the Vizsla. They are from Hungary. This dog was originally a hunting dog. That was me at the IKC Dog Show at McCormick Place for many years. And then for a variety of reasons, including the pandemic, the dog show kind of dissolved and went away. But it's been back! And that is the great news. Erica Wyatt is the co-owner of the International Kennel Club of Chicago these days, and the Great American Dog Show, and the Great American Cat Show, which happens later today, by the way. You can go there right later, not too far from now, in Tinley Park, and you can see dogs and cats. Erica, welcome to WGN.
Thank you so much, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. You recently had a dog show a couple of months ago and cat show. I was out there. You gave me the opportunity to chat with people, which I did. And I had great fun because your shows, you know, you see the dog shows on TV and it's fine. You will see this at your show. what I described, you know, the different breeds going through their paces within the breed and then against a group and then for best in show. All of that happens, but it's much, much, much more than that, Erica.
It is much more than that. And it was such a great pleasure to have you there. And for our spectators as well, because what we try to emphasize is, you know, the most important thing about dogs is not how many ribbons they win in the show ring or in the competition ring. It's the human-animal bond. And, you know, we try to emphasize the things that people can do with their dogs, all dogs, rescue dogs, pet dogs, mixed-breed dogs, purebred dogs, to enhance the quality of their bond with their dog and to find activities to do with their dogs to make that relationship stronger, to make that dog healthier, to keep that dog fitter longer for a longer and happier life. And so we try to incorporate all of these things within the dog show.
So tell me about the puppy show that is happening later today.
Well, the Great American Puppy Show happens on the Saturday of our show in January every year. It's a special event that we developed. It is sponsored this year by Embark, and who is the official puppy DNA sponsor of the Great American Puppy Show. But we wanted to feature puppies. We wanted to get people to come out and meet puppies and see the things puppies can do and to learn about puppies, how to take care of their puppies, how to train their puppies, and how to raise puppies into adults that people want to have in their homes and their families so those dogs are in permanent homes for their whole lives. So we have a Great American Puppy Show, which is features puppies from 4 months to 12 months of age rolling around on the red carpet in a puppy show version of a dog show.
And I assume they're appropriately vaccinated and all that to be able to do this. You know, the socialization is so incredibly important. And one significant reason, and there are several, for people relinquishing pets is behavior. And when dogs have behavior problems, they're usually, totally not always, anxiety-induced. And that oftentimes is from inappropriate socialization or no socialization as puppies. And these puppies will be, I think, socialized to the hilt, Erica.
You are so right, Steve. That's absolutely true. I always tell people that the single greatest thing you can do to protect your pet's future is socialization and training, because dogs that are well socialized and well trained are unlikely to end up with behavior problems that cause them to be homeless. And so, yes, it's a great big deal. Puppies should be socialized throughout their lives. And it's not just good for them as puppies to make them responsible citizens. It's an enriching exercise for dogs. Dogs are naturally curious about their environment and their world. And continuing to get your dogs out doing things with you, not just as a puppy, certainly as a puppy, but throughout their lives is so important for them to really fully participate in life.
Absolutely. Do you have any other special events that people can see this afternoon?
At the January show, we'll be having a grooming show as well, which is really exciting. And, there are all different categories of grooming, but even pet owners, you may know, many people are not even able to clip their own dog's toenails because they haven't been shown how to do it properly, or the puppies haven't been trained as young dogs to accept that grooming willingly. So the grooming show is a great experience for people to come out and see professional groomers who these dogs get pampered their entire lives. Many of the competitors there, they are grooming their own dogs. So those dogs get groomed a lot. They love being groomed. They're dogs who are comfortable in the bath, comfortable on the grooming tables. Some of them are getting breed-specific haircuts and trims to show, for example, trims that they might have used when they were to be used for hunting or things like that. And then there's creative competitions as well, where dogs get fancy haircuts and hairdos too. And it's a really, really interesting thing for people to get out and see. They can come to the show, learn about the greatest grooming products, how to condition their own pets, to accept grooming, to get bathing, to be blow dried. How often should your pet get groomed? What kind of products should you use? It's a really fun event, and it's very interesting as well.
Darn it. I'm disappointed, because when I read the press release and I read that you're having grooming events, I thought it was for spectators who need haircuts. But that's not the case at all. And what you do, I think what's important out of what you said here is also the explanation that goes with it. So you can actually ask someone who may know why poodles, that's always the big one, standard poodles, are cut the way they are cut. There's actually an explanation for these things, Erica.
absolutely true. And, you know, some dogs get haircuts. Some dogs just get rubbed down with a grooming glove. Some dogs, like terriers, get their coats stripped because they're not the kind of coat that you cut. So absolutely come out, ask your questions, talk to professionals, learn how to groom your own dog, or learn how to find a groomer that's responsible and ethical and kind to your dog, so that if you take your dog to a groomer, you can ensure that the dog has a good experience there as well.
And another thing that I so much like about dog shows, listen, there is nothing, and I know you guys support shelters, there's nothing wrong with going to an animal shelter and picking out a dog that way. But the reality is that many people do want, for whatever the reason, an American Cocker Spaniel or Newfoundland dog or Scottish Terrier, whatever breed it is that you'd like. So here's an opportunity to ask breeders also about the demeanor or personality, I think, Erica, of their breed.
Absolutely. And, you know, even if somebody wants to rescue a dog but would like to have a purebred dog, every National Parent Club has a rescue division that they can go to and look for rescue dogs that are purebred dogs as well. But you're so right again, Steve. People can learn about temperament characteristics, how much does the dog shed, how much exercise is required, is it a kind of dog that's easy to train or more challenging to train, are they more independent, are they more prone to barking. You can learn all about your breeds by coming and speaking to experienced breeders.
And that is happening today, the Great American Dog Show at the Tinley Park Convention Center. That's in Tinley Park. It would be silly for it to be anywhere else. 18451 Convention Center Drive. That's the address. When we come back, I want to talk about the sister show, the Great American Cat Show. That's right. There is such a thing. And also, you have event after event after event for kids, making it so family friendly. We'll talk about all of that when we come back on WGN with Erica Wyatt of the International Kennel Club of Chicago. Erica Wyatt is with the International Kennel Club of Chicago. In fact, she's the co-owner of the IKC. I think that Lou Auslander, who owned the club with his family for many, many years, would be so happy with what you and your partner, Scott, are doing with the International Kennel Club. First of all, that you brought it back. And secondly, that you've focused on making it so family friendly. And while it's a legitimate dog show, it's so much more than that, even including cats. And I happen to know he really liked cats as well. At what point in time, how did this happen that you and Scott, who are business partners, decided to be business partners and say, oh, here's a dog show we're going to buy?
Well, Scott and I have both been involved with dog shows for a long time and with purebred dogs on our own for a long time before we got into this. As it happens, I'm a lawyer in my day job, and I was the partner of Lou Auslander's grandson.
Mm.
Many people had been trying to purchase the International Kennel Club for a long time. As you know, Lou passed away. His wife, Sunny, had predeceased him, and his son, Carter, and daughter were owning the kennel club. And they were not as impassioned about it as Lou was, and they wanted to find it the right home. But they, in honor of their parents' memory, they really wanted it to find it the right home. So they were looking for people who were involved in the fancy, who were passionate about it, and who shared some of Lou's vision for what this show could be. And that's how Scott and I ended up purchasing it at the end of 2021.
And you have focused on making it was, but even more so today, so much more family friendly. And today, if you have little ones with you, there are so many things the kids can do out at the dog show, the Great American Dog Show at the Tinley Park Convention Center in Tinley Park. What can the kids do?
Well, and you're quite right. We like to have it be a family-friendly event, and we want kids to come. We want kids there at the show. We have a full-blown kids zone where kids can purchase little stuffed animals. They come with show leads. We have a little kitty confirmation ring where they can show their own dog and get a ribbon, their stuffed dog, and get a ribbon. We have a kids' agility course. We have face painting. We have coloring stations. We have all kinds of things for kids to do. In addition, we have a Greet the Breeds experience. at Every Dog Show, where families can get up and have an interactive experience with breeds on a schedule. So we have 7 to 9 booths at the various shows, and they are staffed hourly with different breeds of dogs with experts in the field. And these are dogs that are appropriate for the public to come up and touch and talk to and pet and learn about, which is another great experience for kids.
So tell me about the cat show and why you decided to say, hey, let's bring in cats too.
The cat show is, it was with us at our November event. They won't be back with us until January 26th, unfortunately, because they had a conflict with this January.
But, oh, no.
The cat show, yes, unfortunately. But the cat show is a really, really popular event. I myself had never been to a cat show until they joined in with us. And it has been extraordinarily successful. And, you know, if you go wander into the cat show, you will be amazed, first of all, at the way that cats are shown and at how friendly and interactive the cat people are. If you just sit down in one of their ringside seats, people will approach you. They will ask you about what kind of cats you have at home, and they will tell you all about their cats, all about their breeds. You get to see the judges judging the cats. It's a very friendly experience for cats. The judges have toys up there to entice the cats to play. They've got a scratching post. The cats get petted and stroked by the judges. It's a really, really fun event. And there are so many different cat breeds. There's over 70 cat breeds recognized by the International Cat Fanciers Association. And there's long-haired breeds and short-haired breeds. Very, very interesting stuff.
It is. Now, you've got something coming up in September. We'll make the announcement right now. Are you ready to make this announcement? Those are high-priced sound effects that we have. So go ahead, Erica Wyatt, and make the big announcement.
September 5th through 7th of 2025, the Great American Dog Show will have its first ever show at Cantigny in Wheaton. It's in the polo field. It's going to be a huge outdoor event. It will feature not only the confirmation show that we've talked about and the kids zone that we've talked about. We will have Fast Cat, which is a 100-yard dash, which is open to all dogs, not just purebred dogs. We will have scent work. We will have agility demonstrations. We will have a 5K for dogs to participate in, for dogs who are interested in getting the AKC Fit V title, which is a fit dog title, again, open to all dogs, not just purebred dogs. We're going to have all kinds of fun stuff, and we are planning to have a BYOD, Bring Your Own Dog Day, to participate in these events.
So people will be able to BYOD, bring their own dog, to this. Now, how do people sign up to do this?
As the events get officially approved by AKC, they will be listed on our website, which is greatamericandogshow.com, and there will be full information on how to register or sign up. The hours of the show, the hours of the events, all of that will be available. It's not quite ready yet because we're going to get through the January event first, but it will go live very shortly after that. And please stop by our website, join our mailing list, and you'll get the latest of all the news for that show.
Yeah, one way to do it is to join the email list, and it'll come to you, I assume. The link will pop into your email box. This sounds like a lot of fun, to bring your own dog to do, for example, scent work. And if you don't know what this is, dogs all become search and rescue dogs. And it's easy enough to do, believe it or not, because dogs live by their nose. And it's easy to teach them to identify different scents. And then to translate that into your own house, so when you lose your phone, like we all do, that your dog can actually find your phone. This is amazing. And by the way, Erica, you can actually teach your dog to do some of these things.
You absolutely can. And, you know, it's so much more than that. It's, again, there's this educational piece that we try to emphasize at our shows. But, you know, there are diabetic scent dogs. They smell the breath of their owners, and they can tell what their insulin level is, what their blood sugar level is, based on the scent of their breath. And there are service dogs that are trained to perform that function. But scent work is one of the great things that dogs can do. They love to do. And if you have a very high-energy dog, people always think high-energy dogs need more exercise. But using their brains for things like scent work training exhausts them. It mentally exhausts them. So if you want a dog that you need to burn some energy off on, join a scent work class. You will not regret it.
I agree with that. So let's talk about the show that you can still go to today. It's in Tinley Park, the Great American Dog Show. Did I say that with enough emphasis, you think?
I think you could use more.
The Great American Dog Show! How's that?
Yay, Steve. That was awesome.
That's at the Tinley Park Convention Center in Tinley Park, 18451 Convention Center Drive. How much are tickets? Do you happen to know offhand? I think they're for, they're
$25? $25 for an adult general admission, $15 for kids. Children 3 and under are free.
That sounds great. I love that word. I mean, free. And I love the dog show. Erica Wyatt from the International Kennel Club of Chicago, co-owner of this great show, the Great American Dog Show, and sometimes Cat Show. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Steve. We love you, too, and we hope to see you there in the near future.
This is an important thing to know about. It's from the American Animal Hospital Association and their vaccination guidelines. So they're the ones that come up with these guidelines. A group of experts from the American Animal Hospital Association come up with the guidelines for all sorts of different topics, including vaccines. What dogs should be vaccinated for what and under what circumstances? And now, leptospirosis, for the first time, is being considered a core vaccine, which means nearly every dog should get it. And all these other organizations, including the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine and others, are on board with this idea. There is more leptospirosis, it seems, than ever before, more in big cities than ever before. Lots of reasons potentially for that, and we can get this potentially from our dogs as well. So this is important to know about. My website has more, stevedale.tv. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.